Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak, and across from me is the handsome Mr. Joe Jans.
Wow, I didn't realize we were going to start off being so complimentary, but I'll take it. Yes, I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And below him, at least on my screen, you guys can't see this, but below him, which is fitting that he's the low man, is our super fan resident. What's the next thing I was going to say?
Resident Evil.
Super fan. Resident
super fan.
Oh yeah, resident super fan. There we go. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Mark Biscotti, super fan, in charge of Twitter account.
Yeah, and that's right. So if you are on Twitter, look for us at CineScare how do you say it?
CineScare.
You mean how do we say CineScare, the name of our podcast?
And at CineScare.com.
Yeah, there as long go. As we're doling out compliments, I want to throw one Mark's way because he's been handling our social media outs and just knocking it out of the park. Not like the Cubs, but more like the Sox. He's been doing an excellent job.
Yeah, he has actually been doing 2016 Cub-like work. Not 2018 Cub-like, 2016 Cub-like work. And we thank him. We're getting lots more followers. So if you are on Twitter, please go find us at CineScare there on Twitter. And Mark has been starting all kinds of conversations and getting things going. Give us a little report from Twitterland, Mark.
Well, Twitterland is the horror community on Twitter is very, very embracing. They've put their arms out, wrapped us up in a nice warm blanket, and has accepted us. We're at like 157 followers from 7 followers when I first started. I've been following other podcasts. I've been actually listening to podcasts once a day, you know, just to show some love, like even out of, you know, the horror, you know, podcast and out of your comfort zone. I've just been listening to other podcasts and they've been doing the same also. So it's been a lot of fun so far. The dark Twitter web hasn't really engulfed us yet. So that's good.
We got a weird friend request on there, or a weird follow, I guess. They don't do friend requests on Twitter, right? It's a follow or something,
right?
Last week, but so far we have not delved too deeply into the weirdness that is the web.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm hoping to get more followers, and we're gonna follow more podcasts and just keep it going.
And this week, this week we have a bit of a different deal. We do have another theme this week, and since this was Joe's choice of theme, I wanted Joe, why don't you introduce what the theme is this week?
So, because the last theme episode that we had was found footage films, which I am frightful of, I wanted to lighten things up a bit, and that's why we went with horror comedy. And it's a very, very broad scoped subgenre, I should say, for us to choose from. We had to have some clarification text messages throughout the late hours, wee hours of the morning.
Yeah.
Sweet Jesus.
Not my fault. Say.
What we've got here is
those of you on Twitter, don't you think you want to get into a text group with Mr. Piscati? Don't do it. He's really hard to text with. But
let me just explain something here, okay? First off, when I text, I don't text just by clicking the letters, okay? I voice text. I do the voice text. And with my Chicago accent, it kind of goes off the rails.
No. That's not what happened. Because what you were what Mark was doing this week was saying, so are we watching intentional horror movies or unintentional horror movies? Now, he left out a very vital word there, and that is comedy. So intentional comedy horror or unintentional comedy horror, but he kept saying intentional horror or unintentional horror, and I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Joe left for 2 days.
That actually would be a very interesting subgenre to get into, is unintentional horror.
I guess. Yeah. But when he means something completely different, it's very confusing. And
what he was getting at is trying to decipher a movie, for example, like all of our listeners have watched, I'm sure, is Drivin' Rasker. That was just a horrific film, but it was unintentionally funny. It's so bad, it's funny to watch. But they came out creating that movie thinking this was a serious horror film. So that was something that Mark was categorizing as unintentionally funny horror film,
right?
Which really wasn't the assignment. I even had to send Mark a Wikipedia list of every horror comedy movie ever made since 1924.
That helped out.
So he has something to choose from. I'm glad that worked out. So, but we, of course, were looking for things more like Beetlejuice and Ghostbusters. You know, it's a horror, boil it down to the brass tacks of it all. It is horror, but it's portrayed in a comedic way.
Yeah. But that's a wide range in and of itself as well. Like
very broad strokes.
Horror comedy can be a spoof like Scary Movie or a Haunted House or something like that. I think that it was one of them too. But it could be one of those, or it could be something like American Werewolf in London, which is a comedy certainly, but the horror is real. Yeah. Like it's the horror parts of it are actually horror, but there's comedy thrown in there. Same with Freaky and a lot of other movies.
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead. Yeah, yeah. Although
Evil Dead two more.
A movie like Evil Dead 2, especially, the comedy isn't from like some joke or something like that. The comedy comes from the over the top nature of the violence and the gore and everything. That's where the comedy comes from. You know, the eyeball flying across the room. You know, it's certainly not a spoof. It's just that it's so over the top. It's hilarious. So. I don't know, Mark. Joe, why don't you start us off? What was the first movie you wanted to talk about that you watched?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is going to be like the perfect summarization of what exactly I was getting at. And this movie holds a very dear place in my heart, actually, in Matt's as well. I was fortunate enough. I used to have a T-shirt with this logo of the movie on it. I was fortunate enough to get that T-shirt at the premiere when this came out in 1991. This, of course, is starring our very own Matt Speak. I watched Beauty Queen Butcher, which is just the epitome of a horror comedy film. And what I'd like all of our listeners to be well aware of is this film is available for free on Amazon Prime.
Is it really?
Is it really? I didn't know that.
Yes. How in the hell did Shane Partlow get Beauty Queen Butcher on Amazon Prime as a Prime download for free?
I'm watching it tonight. I'm watching it tonight.
So just to wind the clock back to 1991, where was the premiere? Was this at like the Andy Whitmire Complex?
The premiere. Yeah, I think it was. No. Wasn't it at the Capitol Theater?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was. This actually, if it were not for Beauty Queen Butcher, Matt and I probably never would have met, because that was the first time I met you.
Yeah.
We were there on.
Well, no, because I wound up going. I wound up going to St. Ambrose, yeah. And you.
Oh,
were
sure,
there.
Sure. Yeah. But this opus is just fantastic. Starring, of course, Tammy Pascatelli, who went on to be, she's doing sets at the local comedy clubs and the casinos here. I mean, Tammy Pascatelli's an actual name, and she got started in this. There are many of our friends that were in there. Don Abbott had a tremendous role. And like I mentioned, our very own Matt Speak was the male interest in this film. For those of you who don't know, this is a very long film, considering the plot involved, but you know,
way too long.
Yeah, there was definitely some editing that could have been taken place in this, but and I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this or not, but I do have a bit of an audio clip. And if it doesn't come through on this, we'll just make sure that I clip the audio in later.
Oh, yeah? Well, have a nice walk home, bitch.
That was our very own Matt Speak saying, oh, yeah, have a nice walk home, bitch. Just
and I puke in this movie.
Yes, you do.
And I'll tell you, when that scene came, they wanted me, and I actually puked. Now, you don't really see it, but I did actually puke because they wanted me to put they mixed a mixture of bread and milk together and like a big gloppy gunk of bread and milk. Now, I hate that consistency. Like soggy bread is so gross to me, and it was soaked in milk and the milk wasn't cold. So I put that in my mouth and it made me actually puke.
Yeah.
And so I think the only thing you see is me actually spitting. I think you hear me puking or something like that in the background, but then you see me spitting.
Out of all the content they could have clipped out of this movie, they clipped out that part.
Right.
And they left absolutely everything else into this film.
The actual acting of puking they kept in every well, I think they wanted to make sure that every single joke they had, you know,
and
was in.
And it is. This
and
is,
I don't think I'm pretty sure the editor, it was a local editor. I think the production place was called Midcoast Productions. And it was a video editing place. So I don't think they were used to editing like a movie. I think they were mostly used to editing personal home videos and things like that more than anything.
Probably. Yeah, I was led to believe that this was shot directly onto VHS tape for a budget of about $20,000.
Yep, and it looks it.
Yeah, it's the quality is there. I'm waiting for the 4K upsample. You know, on the Blu-ray or something later, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the sad part is that they could, you know, I have a camera. They could probably have shot this on and have it have a film, a cinematic look. But yeah, they shot it straight to video on video. And
how does it look, Joe, on Amazon?
It looks just as good as it did way back in 1991. So, and it's just as entertaining. I got to tell you, for those of you, this is kind of an inside joke because, you know, we've been there sort of from the beginning. But for those of you who don't know and have an interest in it, this is a film that was shot in Davenport. It's about these four high school aged, quote unquote, high school aged girls that are trying to get the title crown of the Slough Queen, I believe is what it is.
Yeah, the Slough Queen.
Yeah,
Silvis Slough, Silvis Slough, I think is like I'm not quite sure. It's like a famous part of Silvis.
Yeah,
that everybody jokes around about, and I believe the filmmakers may have been from Silvis.
Now they took a real odd twist on this because you know the four girls are friends and none of them wanted to be last, so they found like this scapegoat gal. They tricked her into running for this so that nobody would have to be last in it.
Sort of like a Carrie.
Yes, a very Carrie-esque type film. But unlike anything else, this is not a murder mystery because you get to see every single murder happen up close while the police are trying to solve it, even though you know damn well who did everything. So it was, it's campy. It's funny because I know these people. I think it's funny even if you don't know these people. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, go watch it. What the hell else are you going to do on a Friday night?
I'm definitely watching it tonight.
There's some funny stuff in it. I have not seen this in a very long time. I don't know that I watched it. I don't know that I watched it again after the premiere. I may have watched it once, but
it's a moral imperative now.
Yeah. But I did think it was kind of funny, the idea that I was the boyfriend of the girl who won the pageant, and then she gets killed, so the runner-up takes over, but then I become the runner-up's
boyfriend. You're part of the crown, yes.
Yeah, I am part of the crown.
I do have one question that I'm hoping you can shed some light onto. So the winner of the crown not only gets the crown and you, but they also inherit the rights to drive around in that giant gray Oldsmobile-type vehicle why didn't they wash it ever? Like, you would have thought that on set, somebody would have said, hey, maybe just hose it down a little so it looks cleaner.
I think they might have. That might have been a director's choice. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. So again, it's a classic opus. You'll never find anything quite like it. So.
Yeah. Believe me, it's it is unique. But and it does, like Joe said, it does star an actual semi celebrity, Tammy Pescatelli, yeah. Who is a big. Big comedian. I mean, she's very well known in the comedy circuit, and if you look at her videos on YouTube, her stand-up videos, there's quite a few views and that sort of thing. I wouldn't say she's a household name or something like that, but she's well known around comedy circuits, and so she did that, and then the cameraman did another short movie called Thirst for Blood that I was in as well. And she was also in that one too.
And who did the hair?
You mean like who was hair and makeup?
Yeah. Isn't he like some hairstylist of the stars now?
Oh yeah. That's right. It was Dean Banowitz.
Dean Banowitz. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And he is now he's out here in LA, a big hairstylist of the stars. He actually, his claim to fame, he was on the original run of American Idol, and yeah. He was Ryan Seacrest's he became Ryan Seacrest's personal hairstylist. And he actually practiced on my head for that hairstyle that he used to have, that, you know, where there was like the hair going in all crazy directions or whatever. He kind of practiced on me at one point.
I did that hairstyle for sure. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. Everybody did. But he did. He was, part of Clay Aiken's whole makeover that he did, and all of these people who were just unknowns that then became stars on American Idol. He was a big part of that. So yeah, no, that's true.
He should have got an Emmy for Clay Aiken's. Holy cow. That was actually a pretty good transformation.
Because of this film, that's my 7 steps to Kevin Bacon, or 6, whatever it is. So,
well, if you really want to watch me when I was about, I think I was probably 21, maybe 20, something like 21, 22, somewhere in there, acting and puking, go check it out. Half our friends from college are in it too.
Kathy Menzik, this is the lead. I did find somebody was selling a Beauty Queen Butcher sweatshirt on eBay.
Really?
Yeah. And had I known that I would have gotten it in time, I would have easily bought it. But they're selling it from New York.
Are these like old sweatshirts that people had, or they made them new?
No. These are the original from 1991.
The
white long sleeve. Yeah, from doing a little research, I found out that this film actually does have quite the underground cult following.
Wow.
Who'd have thunk?
Well, Mark, on your Twitter escapades, you can use that little tidbit.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be throwing that in. Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm done talking about Beauty Queen Butcher completely. Excellent.
That's a good one. Mark, check it out. What do you got?
So I decided to go stroll back into the 1980s and watch The Stuff. What does that look? What?
All right, hold on, Mark's. It is Joe's chief desire this episode to not have to have a stop so that he has to edit a whole bunch of stuff. Your internet seems to be going cray cray again. So, all right.
Maybe talk slower.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Hang on.
Go ahead. Well, while you're figuring out your internet, I will go ahead and talk about my first movie, which was Tucker and Dale versus Evil. And I got to say that I really, really liked this movie. This is one, you know, there's those movies where you're just not sure if you're going to like them or not, you know, and you kind of, I don't know, you just see them and you're like, I gotta watch that, and then you just don't. Tucker and Dale versus Evil has been one of those for me. I don't know what it is. I just don't find hillbilly humor to be all that funny to me, and I wasn't exactly sure what this was going to be like, and I was actually kind of blown away by this thing. Thank you, Mark. You're the one who recommended that I watch it, because I think you watched it first too. So I don't know if this is what you were going to talk about, but I thought it was fantastic. And what was so good to me was that you know, there's that whole subgenre of horror that has to do with city slickers, you know, college kids or whatever, going on a vacation down in the South, the whole deliverance kind of thing. And then hillbillies come and you know, inbred backwoods people come and, you know, attack them or whatever. And so it's that whole setup. There's these college kids going down to the South to go on a camping trip or stay in a cabin. I think one of their families owns a cabin or whatever. And so on their way down, they stop at a gas station. And of course, there's these hillbillies there looking hillbilly-ish. And then we see the hillbillies talking to each other. And one of them is like, oh, look at those girls. They're so pretty. And the other one's like, well, why don't you go talk to them? You know, you're a good guy. You got a vacation home and everything. And so he decides to go talk to them. And of course, he does it all wrong and looks like a crazy person. And so the kids are like, hey, we don't want any trouble. So the whole thing is a bunch of misunderstandings about these guys' intentions, and the kids get themselves into trouble. I just thought it was fantastic. I laughed. You know, Michelle and I watched it. We were laughing hysterically through this thing. I was really surprised by how good it was.
I think it had to do with the actor Tyler Labine, who played Dale.
Is he the bearded one?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was. I thought he was so endearing, and you just wanted to give that guy a hug left and right. And he's very charismatic, I thought. Yeah, he might be like a little overweight or something, but very charismatic. You really felt for these characters, these two friends, and some of the comedy bits, like when what's the actor's name? The other friend. Oh, it's escaping me. What's his name?
Tucker.
Tucker.
Yeah, Tucker. Where he yeah, thanks. Oh God. So he's like literally chainsawing through the log and all that. He hits the wasp nest and all that, and he gets like just stung up and all that kind of stuff, and he's pouring beer over his face and all that, and he's going, well, that really hurts, and it feels hurt. I think it's great, and it really took a dark, fun twist with the college guy at the end and all that kind of stuff. And it's just a great film. It was just fun all the way. The wood chipper scene was great.
I want to point out one actress in that the main blonde girl that. Anybody that knows me knows that I am a huge, huge fan of the TV show 30 Rock, which she played Ceri in that show. And so I was very pleased when I watched this movie to see that she was in it. She also wound up being in another film that I watched in this whole genre later. But Tucker and Dale versus Evil. I think it's false advertising because I didn't really see any evil. It was Tucker and Dale versus, you know, City Slickers. But
right.
it was funny. Like Mark said, I love the wood chipper scene. That was classic.
Yeah, it was.
He's just holding it. He's going, I'll get you out. I'll get you out.
Yeah,
it's great.
Or he's chopping down a tree in the yard and hits a beehive. So he takes off running with his chainsaw like a crazy person, but he's just trying to get away from bees. So there were a lot of like misunderstandings like that were just ridiculously hysterical. So I loved that one. That was
probably it's basically just a movie. It's just like, it's a lesson of never judge a book by its cover.
Totally.
And it's really, really like just a good, like, feel good movie actually at the end. I loved it.
Yeah, it has a heart. It's a sweet movie in a way, you know, even though it's all, you know, it is violent and everything, but there's a sweet heart to it and everything. I really liked it. I guess that's sort of Mark in my first one, I guess. Go ahead, Joe.
One of my favorite movies, period. And it's the only movie that exists that has Steve Martin and Bill Murray. I couldn't remember Bill Murray. Only movie starring Steve Martin and Bill Murray. Anybody, either of you guys know it?
And it's a horror comedy?
It's a horror comedy. It's a classic horror comedy.
What?
I can't think of anything that Steve Martin is in with him. Yeah, I don't know.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh. Duh. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on. Okay.
This is absolutely one of my all-time favorites. The music is fantastic. Rick Moranis, Jim Belushi's in it, John Candy, Christopher Guest is even, he has a very small, brief cameo, but it's just, I absolutely love it. The Ellen Green, that girl, the main character, plays Audrey, or I guess more to the point, Audrey 1, what a set of pipes on her. And that's not a euphemism, although she is very well endowed. But this is an all-around fantastic film. I introduced my kids to this film very, very, very long time ago, and they grew up on it, and they love it, and they'll still put it on, even without me begging them to put it on. They'll do it themselves from time to time. Little Shop of Horrors, and it was one of those movies that I saw as soon as it came out, like on VHS, and I remember when I got to see Steve Martin playing the sadistic dentist, and then I found out this was an actual staged musical, and maybe someday I could actually be in this. I had my sights just locked on. I wanted to be Steve Martin as dentist. Never got to, probably never will, but still one of my all-time favorite bits in that. And Bill Murray, the scene in the dentist chair with him, once he got in the chair, everything that he said was completely ad-libbed. And I highly recommend everybody just go back and just watch that scene.
Oh, it's Bill Murray, I have
Steve Martin. It's fantastic. Yeah, so
I have watched just that scene, and it's fantastic.
It's wonderful. So yeah. Anyway, that's one of my all time favorites. That's Little Shop of Horrors.
That's a great one. I didn't even think of that movie.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I'd thought about watching that one. I hadn't seen it in quite some time. But what about you, Mark?
Okay, so speaking of Bill Murray, I'm thinking of Ghostbusters 2. I decided to rewatch this movie because I had a coworker of mine that was recently talking about how he just rewatched Ghostbusters 2, and I don't think I've watched that movie in over 30 years. And it's been that long. Since it was made in 1989, it's basically, so it's 5 years later, and the Ghostbusters have lost all their credibility after blowing up the top 5 stories of a building and covering New York City with marshmallows. And so then the discovery of a river of ectoplasm underneath the city that results to emotions and a painting of an evil 16th century madman called Vigo. The Ghostbusters have to save the day once more. And I watched it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I wanted to talk to Joe, since he's such a huge fan of Ghostbusters. What did you think of Ghostbusters 2?
I celebrate the entire catalog. And I know I've got the oddball opinion on this, but everybody's going to hate me for saying this. I really like the girl one too. I can hear everybody right now booing at their iPhones. But I'm sorry. I have a movie poster of the girls one downstairs in my basement, in my movie shrine. But honestly, I'm ecstatic that they're finally bringing this, franchise back to life, and that there's another, you know, continuation of the storyline coming out very soon. I think it's this summer. Ghostbusters is a staple. Whenever I hear horror comedies, that's definitely in my top 5. My entire family went as Ghostbusters 1 year for Halloween. I spent 6 months making proton packs for our costumes with my son and I. We made 2 of them. And it was just so many fantastic memories. I absolutely loved it. We have a Halloween party like every other year, and that was by far one of my favorite years. I think I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning next to our main floor's toilet, having no idea where the hell I was, but so definitely had a wonderful time.
Yeah, I think Peter McNichol was like the scene stealer in that whole entire movie.
Yeah.
Here's a little tidbit. He came up with that accent on his own. I thought it was great. Slimer was brought into the movie because of the popularity of the cartoon of the real Ghostbusters going on. And I think that cartoon actually kind of like hurt the movie, and I'm gonna say, because they did the costumes more like the cartoon. There wasn't kind of like vulgar or adult humor that was brought into Ghostbusters 2. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Ghostbusters 2 and all that, but I thought that there was a lot of marketing that was going into that film, and especially with the script. I believe they rewrote the script like 4 times.
I'm very glad that they didn't make a third at that time period. Those movies were just starting to spiral down the toilet. I don't mean Ghostbusters 2. I just mean movies of that era, you know, when they've jumped the shark enough times. It had all the earmarks of starting to wind down a road of regret. So I'm glad they pulled, you know, they cooled their jets right after the second one. But I really like the second one. Nothing tops the original. But like I said before, it's one of my all time favorites.
And that was a 1989, right? When that came out, I believe, right?
And that was a summer.
Huge summer. It was Ghostbusters 2, Batman,
Lethal Weapon 2, Rain Man.
Got Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and When Harry Met Sally.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Back to the Future 2.
It was a great year for soundtracks, too.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
You had Bobby Brown. Yeah. You had Prince Batman soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Bobby Brown, you know.
And that was the beginning of Harry Connick Jr. with Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Friday 13th Part 8, Joe.
Who could forget?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, although it may have been 1988, I believe Halloween 5 came out in 89 as well.
Every time I bring up Friday 13th, you gotta bring up Halloween, Matt.
That's right. Well, it's better. Okay, so let's see. My next one was a little flick called Bloodhook, and I'm not certain that Bloodhook is a horror comedy, but it's produced by the same people who produce, or some of the same people who produced Mystery Science Theater 3000. But it's hard to tell exactly. I don't think they quite knew what to do with themselves. I mean, they had this concept that is on the surface on paper a comedy, and that is a killer who uses a fishing lure to kill people. Like, that's your slasher, is a guy casting a lure. And literally a couple of the kills, it took a while because he didn't quite get to them. And so remember that there was that one kill where the girl is on a surfboard or some kind of raft or something. She's laying there and it keeps casting next to her. And she's like, what's that? You know, and it does. And then finally it hits her. And of course that always hits them and there's just blood and I don't know why they can't just pull it out and throw it away, but they're stuck and then they get, I guess, pulled in. I liked the scene for the budget. I thought the scene where the guy is kind of putting one of the dead guys that he got, the killer, he's putting him on the line, you know, with the hook or whatever.
Like what they do with the fish and all that.
Right. Yeah. He put it on the string. What is that called? The stringer, I guess, is what it's called or whatever. He put him on that. That was, I mean, for this budget, not bad. I mean, the guy's head
reminded me of Creepshow from the one episode of with Ted Danson
and Leslie Nielsen. Yeah.
They kind of looked like those.
Hmm. Yeah, and I thought, not too shabby for that budget. But the problem was it didn't really know. I mean, this is a concept that was ripe for more spoof kind of stuff and more comedy, and they really didn't go down the comedy road aside from the ridiculousness of the kills with these giant lure and somebody casting like that. That's just a ridiculous concept. So I don't know if maybe what they were trying to do is make one of those movies that's so bad it's funny, but it just didn't quite work in any way.
Like an unintentional horror comedy.
intentionally unintentional comedy. Yeah, yeah.
You're forgetting the aspect of what actually makes the killer turn into a killer.
Cicadas.
The devil's tritone, the record player.
Yeah.
And you do have to agree, there is a very positive message about how if you work out and exercise, you'll get the girl. Because there's quite a lot of sit-ups in this film.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the final girl, basically, who was sitting by the pool, and the guy like cast a line, and it's in her hand and all that, and she's screaming and all that, and then she goes and wraps it around the metal bar where you get up from the pool and all that kind of stuff, and the hooks are all the way through her hands and all that, but she gets out of that, and then she goes into that, what is that thing, that contraption that goes from the cabin house all the way down to the lake?
It's like a
I don't know.
Is that a thing? Yeah, it is a thing. Yeah. In fact, if you guys go to Dubuque, they've got one. It's I can't remember what those are called, but it's like a little train car that goes up and down a steep hill. But they've got them in certain small towns where there's a hill. In Dubuque, there's a very famous one. People pay just to ride that thing.
But here's the thing, is that she's hiding behind like the little dock cabin, whatever, and she's waiting for this thing to come down. And all she has to do is just go up the hill, man. That's all she has to do. And the guy's in the boat, and he misses the first time. And she's still screaming, going, come on, hurry up, waiting for this thing to come down. It was ridiculous. I loved it.
It's like, I'm the killer, and I'm going to get you eventually.
Exactly.
Someday, when I get around to it. Yeah.
We have to talk about the kid. We have
the
to talk about
the kid. Yes, at the beginning?
The
or
yes, the boy at the beginning.
A little smart.
Yes, where the mom's talking about on Golden Pond.
Yeah.
He just comes up, he's going, it's Henry Fonda, Mom. You got the wrong one. Peter Fonda. I died on that. I mean, he was a scene stealer. And then with the stud finder, where he's like, decides to put it at the, with the killer's head and all that. Oh, yeah, there's the, he's got a metal plate in there and all that. That's what's like sending off all the, with the cicadas and the music, turns him into a ravenous killing spree murderer.
I actually, I wish I had my $6 back.
Yeah,
I was not a huge fan.
I watched
it
twice.
I still didn't
get your money's worth, Mark.
Yeah, no, you'd have to watch it five more times. Yeah. But actually, I'm glad I watched it, but I'm really mad that I paid $6 to watch it.
I'm not glad I watched it. All right, there we go.
Okay, so what is
it? It's always an adventure, Joe. It's always an adventure.
But this is what I'm here for. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that I think the director tried to make this movie serious, and maybe he was looking at some rough cuts and all that kind of stuff. He's going, all right, this is kind of ridiculous. And then they started because it really went off the rails at the end of the movie. I mean, they had the final girl where she's just sitting in the bait shop and all that. She's going, so, you've been here before and all that and all that. Right. And
that's what I'm saying is it didn't know it. It then it decided, OK, now we're just going to turn this into a comedy. And they puts her in the cabinet, that whole part. It is ridiculous. It was just ridiculous. I did like the contest where you cast into the
life preserver.
Yeah, the life preserver. Yeah.
Yeah. With the tassel.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think that's more than enough time on Bloodhook.
So you guys don't want to talk about, hey, teach me how to cast.
No.
No.
Okay.
Let our listeners waste their own $6, and if they decide to, they can watch it.
Yeah, they can watch Bloodhook.
Yeah.
Although you are still an enigma to me, Joe, because I really thought this would be one you liked. Like, I can't quite put my finger on what exactly it is that you like.
Just because I'm championing Drive-In Massacre doesn't mean I like all terrible movies.
Well, I don't know what it is, but I would have thought this was one that you might have liked, but I guess it's not as charming as as Drive-In Massacre.
I'm just a fan of chubby cops. What can I say?
Well, there you go. All right, Joe. So what's your next one?
Okay, I went directly from Little Shop of Horrors to just a classic in the genre. Was this 1974? Yeah, 1974. The guy that really knows how to bring the funny, Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
That's Frankenstein.
I mean, you can't talk about horror comedy without walking right into the Young Frankenstein.
My name, it's pronounced Frankenstein.
If anybody listening within the sound of my voice has not seen this movie, turn this podcast off and go watch it. Whether you're a horror fan or a comedy fan, well, not that there's a whole lot of horror film, but it's still, you got to watch this. This is like growing up and never seeing any classic Hollywood film. It should be in your top 100 of films to watch before you die. But I mean, it's not my favorite Mel Brooks film, but it's in the top three easily. I was brought up on this. Obviously, it came out in 1974. My folks raised me on Mel Brooks films. I don't really know what to say about it because I just assume that everybody's seen it. And Gene Wilder's fantastic in it. Peter Boyle.
Gene Wilder wrote it.
Yeah, yeah. Marty Feldman, the joke about the hump changing sides on his back. It's fantastic. Cloris Leachman, who just recently died. Just classic. Madeline Kahn. Terry Garr.
What knockers.
Oh, thank you, doctor.
It's basically a spoof of the old Universal.
Original Frankenstein, yeah.
Yeah, monster movies, especially Frankenstein. And it's got the black and white. But the humor, I mean, there's a joke every couple of seconds. There's a joke every couple seconds.
Yeah.
And you can see that this had to have been an influence on the people who made Airplane and all those movies. It's definitely, this was the beginning of that whole idea of spoofing genres.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's so beautifully shot. Just like watching that movie, it's so beautiful just with the black and white and just the hazes and just how it looks. It's absolutely gorgeous.
If nothing else, just watch Peter Boyle and Gene Wilder do Putting on the Ritz.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of sums up the whole idea of it. And
little montage to the King Kong kind of thing going on.
Yeah, well, absolutely fantastic.
And the setups were so great. Like, he's like, no matter what you hear in this room, do not open this door. And the minute he's saying that something's going to happen, that he's going to want to get out of there. And like 2 seconds later, he's like, let me out.
Yeah.
And also Gene Wilder went to University of Iowa. So,
oh, that's right.
He really did.
Yeah. He was, his name, I believe his name at the time was Jim Silberman or something like that.
Was it his first film, Bonnie and Clyde with Warren Beatty?
That was, I don't know if it was his first film, but it was his big break. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, my theater teacher in high school went to Iowa with Gene Wilder, or at the time Jim Silberman or whatever his name was. And they were in the same class. And he talked about how talented he was and how crazy he was and all this stuff. But he said that he went to see Bonnie and Clyde and didn't realize that Gene Wilder was in it until that scene comes up and he was like, oh my God, that's Jim. So,
Young Frankenstein's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. It's a fantastic one. What about you, Mark?
I think we all watched this, or I think we all agreed to watch this. Frankenhooker.
I didn't actually watch Frankenhooker. Did you watch Frankenhooker, Joe?
Yes, I.
Yes, thank
took
you.
The first step forward. I was the one that watched it first.
Thank you, Joe. I was like on bated breath there.
What an
amazing film!
I was like, I was getting, I was really scraping the bottom of the barrel when I found Frankenhooker. It was one of those movies that I saw like the VHS cover for when I was a kid. I mean, this thing came out, what, 1990?
Oh, yeah. Remember, it's been on my radar for a long time.
Oh, my gosh, man.
And I never watched it.
Oh, my gosh, man. It's so good. I mean, this is probably, and Joe's like looking at me like I'm out of my mind. I enjoyed watching this film so much. Okay. James Lorenz, who is like the lead. No, it's not terrible. No.
No, James Lorenz is terrible.
No, he's great in this. Okay. He's great in this film. He's got the perfect New Jersey accent. The whole film was filmed in New Jersey. This whole movie is basically starts off with a birthday party for this girl's father, James Lorenz, who plays basically Dr. Frankenstein, you know, his character and all that kind of stuff, builds a lawnmower, and it's a remote control lawnmower. And his girlfriend, who is the father's daughter, says, "Happy birthday. You know, here's a remote control lawnmower." And she says, "Look, you can, you know, start it from here. You can move it forward and backwards," and basically she runs over herself with the lawnmower and just cuts herself into pieces. And so the boyfriend basically puts her together again, but with hookers. I think it's great. I think it's like 56 minutes into the film until you actually see the Frankenhooker. There's a lot of nudity, a lot of breasts. There's a party scene in a hotel where he's trying to choose what parts he wants from the hookers to reanimate his girlfriend. And he makes like a super crack out of crack, and the hookers see the super crack. They go absolutely ballistic. Some of the best acting I've seen from hookers in my whole entire life, how excited they are. Then they start smoking the crack. And
really? You've never seen Pretty Women? The acting from Pretty Woman is
Julia Roberts. Okay.
Yeah.
But just the excitement and just how excited they were for seeing this super crack. And so they started smoking the super crack. And what happens? They start exploding. And it's one of the just great exploding hooker scenes I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
Hang on. I want to stop you one more time. Let's not forget Jamie Lee Curtis's hooker portrayal.
Oh, Trading Places.
Yeah.
Okay.
And come on, Mark, this is third at best.
I'm just saying how, I mean, for just like actors off the street with these women.
I'd put them even below Deuce Bigalow, male gigolo.
Never seen that movie.
Ouch.
But anyways, these hookers start exploding. You got a pimp called Zorro, this huge muscle-bound guy, and he like burst open the door trying to get in because he wants his money and all that kind of stuff. And what happens? A hooker explodes, and a severed head just comes towards his face, knocks him out. I love this movie. I laughed out loud more than definitely Bloodhook and a lot of other comedy horrors. Joe, you did not like it at all?
No, I regretted watching it now. Oh, I have like a Frankenhooker hangover now.
Oh, my God. Gosh, I mean, even the Frankenstein doctor's character, when they're smoking the super crack and he's going, and they're playing like off the ghetto blasters going, "Not the devil's music." And he's just, oh, God, I love it. I love it.
Well, Mark, that was one that I did not watch.
My God.
Consider yourself lucky.
I thought one of you guys were going to love it. Matt didn't see it and Joe hated it.
I will watch it because it is something I think I got to watch. You know, how can you not watch Frankenhooker? But
yeah, I think you're going to like it. I really do.
All right. Well, I'll check it out. My next one was a bit of a revisit. I watched it last year, and it was actually my number 3 horror movie of last year. and that is Spontaneous. That is one that I absolutely love this movie. It's got really, I think, everything that I love in a movie. It's got horror, it's got comedy, and it's got 80s music. Now, I don't know how realistic it is for a girl in modern day to be really into 80s style music, but you know, there's those throwback kids that, you know, I've had students in my classes that love 80s music. So, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And of course, this movie isn't about every kid, it's about this kid. And so I thought it was fantastic, and I love the whole beginning where the kid finally explodes. And this is one of those things where the thing that I love about horror comedy is that the horror and comedy are very much related to each other. They both really depend on the same thing. They depend on a setup for the payoff. If there's no setup, you know, the horror movies that you watch where, you know, let's say, let's talk about Friday the 13th Part 4, for instance. Now, there's some good kills in there, certainly, but there's one where the person just is introduced for 2 seconds, and then 2 seconds later, Jason comes and kills her. And that's the one where the girl is hitchhiking on the road, and then he comes up behind her and kills her.
That's Part 4. That's Part 4. She's eating the banana. Yeah.
That is a perfect example of no setup and a payoff that is just like, whatever, you know. One might say that in Part 6, the guy's playing paintball is a similar situation, but I thought that was more played for laughs than horror, right? But they're both dependent on that. Without a good setup, it's not scary. Without a good setup in comedy, it's not funny. And horror movies and comedies only have to do one thing, right? If a comedy makes you laugh and makes you laugh consistently, it's a classic comedy. It doesn't have to be a great movie. It doesn't even have to have great acting. It has to make you laugh. And if it does that, it's a classic, right? You talk about Anchorman, that could easily have just been another Saturday Night Live movie that was not very good, that just kind of bombed, like Night at the Roxbury or something like that. But it had great timing, great setup, and great delivery. And the best horror movies do that too. They set up the scares, or they set up the excitement and the tension, and then there's a payoff that works, right? That's just a little side note on my idea of why horror and comedy are so similar to each other. But then you also add in with Spontaneous, there's this sort of teenage love story going on that's almost John Hughes-esque, you know, and kind of reminded me a little bit. I don't know, for some reason, nothing specific, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of Some Kind of Wonderful, maybe a little bit, or, you know, one of those Pretty in Pink kind of thing. She wasn't as nerdy as what's her name in Andy in Pretty in Pink, but at the same time, it's still there's that kind of sense that she's a unique girl, and she has fallen in love with this unique kid, you know. And of course, all the exploding. Did you guys both watch this, by the way?
I watched it and immediately fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate myself because I did not watch that movie.
I loved it on so many different levels. It's so funny. The horror aspect of it is great. Great music. But the thing that I like the best about it is all the different levels you can enjoy this on. I mean, the movie's just metaphor after metaphor. I mean, this isn't a movie about a bunch of kids dealing with on the surface, it's a bunch of kids in their senior year, their high school class. Kids are just spontaneously exploding like giant blood bags. But the story isn't about that. It's about the kids that are surviving and how they deal with that. And it's also about how kids at that time in their life handle the stress of going to college, leaving their friends, finding, you know, a new love, you know, all that stuff, that angst, the trouble, the stress that all these high school kids go through. And it's very endearing on so many different levels. I recommended this to my son and my daughter, and they both loved it. It's just, I kind of wish I had watched this later in our 2 weeks off, because I would have, if I had more time, easily watched it again. But the minute I get a chance, I'm watching it a second time.
It kind of made me feel like if John Hughes had made a horror movie.
Yeah, it's a heartwarming comedy horror film.
Yeah, totally. I think it probably would have been better set in another time period, like the 80s or something like that. But
definitely.
It's fine as it is. I don't have a problem with anything about it. And I thought it was just very well written. The love story was believable. The horror was believable. And the payoff ending, there's heartbreak involved, but it's all believable. And it's all like you're in it. Like it's not something that it's not just a castaway. Most of these horror comedies are just pure entertainment and you enjoy it and everything, but you're emotionally in this movie. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Matt, you stressed to, you know, watch that movie, and I can't believe I didn't. Now I feel left out. Dang it.
I will tell you this, Mark, I never stress watching a movie unless I really mean it. Like I might suggest something like Bloodhook, when I stress something, I really mean it.
Dang it.
So that was mine, Spontaneous. That was from 2020. And like I said, if anybody wants to go back and watch or listen to our top 20 horror movies of 2020, or top, I'm sorry, well, 20, because it was 10 of yours and 10 of mine, right?
Yeah.
This was number 3 on my list. So, and that's of all horror movies I saw last year, which I thought last year was a pretty good year for horror. So, Joe, what do you got?
I'm curious if either one of you have seen the 2014 film called The Voices with Ryan Reynolds.
No.
No, I didn't see that one.
Ryan Reynolds and Anna Kendrick. This Ryan Reynolds plays a, I don't want to say a normal average guy, but he's your main character. And the movie starts off, he works at like a tub or a fixture factory at this very small town, and he seems normal and well-adjusted, and but there's obviously he's got some sort of twisted past. He's dealing with some baggage he's had in his life, and turns out it was some mommy issues, and he's a little crazy. And you get to see him come home to his apartment to his cat and his dog, both of which tell him to kill people. So it's him constantly being told by his cat, Mr. Whiskers, to kill every single person that he encounters. And then inevitably one day he gives into it. The dog is nice. Dog's trying to talk him out of it, but Mr. Whiskers is just a dick. The movie's very funny. And then it's like how he's supposed to try to survive. He ends up falling in love with another girl, which inevitably becomes another victim, and so on and so forth, and how he's trying to get away with it. It's got that typical Ryan Reynolds charm. This is all before Deadpool, but it's still funny. The thing that I like the most about it that I didn't really notice until later in the film is when he comes home to his apartment and he's not taking his meds. When he is crazy and psychotic and his dog and cat are talking to him, his apartment is clean and pristine and well organized. But when he finally, his psychiatrist talks him into going back to start taking his meds, and then you see him and he's, you know, quote unquote normal, you look at his apartment and it's just a pit. So he's very, very delusional. This was, it was one of those things, again, scrolling through Netflix, you see the little, you know, hey, there's Ryan Reynolds in a pink jumpsuit. Oh, I should watch it someday. Finally got around to watching it. Very glad I did. The Voices.
Nice. That is one I will have to check out. Yeah. So, all right, Joe. Well, that sounds like we are at about an hour or so right now. So I think we're going to have to split this one up into two parts, Joe. And I know that makes you crushed because...
Oh, I know. Another whole 2 weeks of nothing but horror comedies.
It's very hard for Joe to... He's sitting here saying, oh, no, really?
I twist my arm. Ow.
Look, I have to say that I've enjoyed these 2 weeks because after the found footage, I was pretty much drained. And... listening to watching comedy horror was a really nice relief, and I've been enjoying myself immensely.
Well, actually, I'm kind of excited to stretch this out one more episode because I picked found footage. You picked comedy horror. If we're going to be fair to the super fan, he's going to have to pick the next genre, even though Friday the 13th was really kind of
his Friday the 13th was mine, so
I guess it was sort of. So I don't know, maybe it's my turn again.
It's your turn again, Matt.
But one more week, guys. Come back next week. We're gonna do part two of comedy horror. And the reason for that is just there's so much of it. It's something we gotta spend some time on, and we all love it. So especially Joe.
And it's such a huge genre. We can't. Yeah. We took Friday the 13th, which was 12-13 movies, and we stretched that into two.
Yeah.
This is an entire subgenre. It's got to be two episodes.
Totally. Okay. Well, thanks, guys. And we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Don't forget to follow Twitter.
Bye bye. Save us, man.